Hello and welcome to the Angsty Christian Podcast. This is your deconstruction daddy, Daniel. And fun fact about me, I like creamy peanut butter.
Really?
Yeah.
Creamy peanut butter? What's the benefit of creamy peanut butter versus chunky peanut butter?
I don't have a bunch of like little nut pieces in my mouth and I can just enjoy the peanut butter.
All right. The nut in your mouth is the best part of the chunky peanut butter though. God, dude.
I knew you were going to say that.
Okay. Well, you go then, Jake. Fine. Hi, everyone. I'm Jake. I'm your depression dad. And fun fact about me, I am a chunky peanut butter guy, and I'm not a smooth peanut butter guy like a goddamn heathen.
So you heard it here for all of you people who are building up our fandom wiki page. Jake does like nuts in his mouth. And that's okay. We're totally okay with that.
Yeah.
So
that's exactly what it translates to.
So if anyone does want to gift anything to Jake, chunky peanut butter would be the perfect way to gift it to him. Or actually what you should do, because his birthday was recently, as of recording this podcast episode was a week ago.
We haven't shut up about it for the last 3 weeks.
Yes, you're welcome. And so you can still get him a birthday gift. But also if any of you would like to donate for his tattoo, his first tattoo, DM me on Instagram.
Oh my God.
At Daniel C. Ramos. Yeah.
Oh my God. I had a space where I didn't think about that happening and it being a reality. And now here we are. I've been reintroduced to me getting a tattoo very soon.
Yes. So please. But today we do have a really wonderful guest with us. And right before we introduce our guest, we do want to make a couple of quick announcements. First off, if you are listening to us on Apple, or if you don't, please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a review. And we will do a cool shout out. We will add you officially to the Angsty Christian Podcast lore. We'll go from there.
Oh, yeah.
Also, we do have a Patreon, which should be posted. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Should be posted by the time that this podcast airs. And so I believe we'll put the link in the description because I forgot what it is. I think it's like the Angsty Heretics because for some reason Angsty Christian Pod was already taken or something.
How? Who?
I don't know. I honestly think it might have been me on accident and I can't delete it. And I tried deleting it. So we'll put the link in our both on our link tree, but also in the show notes. So that way you can be able to go join our Patreon. We have different levels of options. And the whole goal is because we do have a few pretty dope people who are going to be coming on the podcast soon, besides our really dope person who is waiting to start talking. We do have a couple others, and we would like to pay pretty much all of our guests in general for their time because we think that, you know, they've gone through experiences and they should be paid for their time just like everyone else should. So the Patreon's purpose is really to help with that, and then anything else that we need to get for the podcast and whatnot, and also to help free up more of our time. So, but in addition to that, really, we want to be able to create community with you. So we do have a Discord server, which you can find on our show notes, and then through our link tree, which is also in our show notes, but also on our Instagram account, which is at Angsty Christian Pod. So
do join the Discord. Just recently, and by just recently, I mean like a couple weeks ago, we talked pretty in depth about the Scopes trial, surprisingly. Yes. and how both dumb and important that entire piece of history was to the viewpoint of basically Christian exceptionalism, I want to say.
American exceptionalism.
Well, it is American exceptionalism, but this one was specifically on the Christian market.
True.
About how they thought they were better than everyone else, and so they should only teach Bible times in school on how the origin of the earth works and how important the study of scientific evidence and all that is on top of that, and how there's more than one religion and we should do something that doesn't glorify a single religion, but allows space for discussion amongst everyone and also amongst people that have no religion. So yeah.
We did go really in depth. I'm laughing.
We did.
Because I was just really long about Jake was gonna keep going and going and going. But no, it was good. So join our Discord. That is also on our Linktree. But so we have a very special guest with us. If you have ever listened to the Speaking in Church podcast, you may have heard their a little bit of their story before. If you haven't, well, guess what? Not only is that episode going to be in our show notes, but also they're going to talk about it right now. And so this individual is a good friend of mine from college. Literally one of the first people, if not the first person that I met at Azusa Pacific University. And we started talking and I accidentally ditched their birthday because of a lot of different things when they were down here recently. And so I hope they'll forgive me. And you can't see it, but on the Zoom, they're laughing really hard. But this is one of my, honestly, one of my favorite people that I ever met at Azusa Pacific University. And so I would like to introduce you to Joey Reyes. Say hello.
Hello. I'm still kind of really, yeah, there's already so much to unpack in like all of that talking about APU.
Oh my God. Well,
Joey. I'm wearing my shirt, my APU shirt right now.
Oh, that's funny.
Nice.
My alumni shirt.
I'm not.
It's like an at home, you know, just lounging around, or like a gym shirt at this point, because you know it's like 5 years old now.
Yes. Honestly, yeah, that's the same with my APU alumni. Any APU shirt that I have, if I didn't throw it out, is now like an at home only shirt, like working hard shirt or like working out shirt.
Yeah, it's pretty much like a rag that you wear at this point.
Yes, that is what all your college t-shirts are turned into, Jake, as you start going to college. Well, you already started.
I just started, yeah. I got the mug, and that mug is going to last me for the rest of my life. So,
I mean, that's
until it chips.
Yes. Well, Joey, introduce yourself a little bit. And I mean, we might just end up just going straight into it at this point. And so, sorry guys, if you don't hear any of the do at this point, because we might just go straight into it because that makes sense to me. So
sure. Yeah. Let's see. Hello everyone. My name is Joey Reyes. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. I am here on the lands of the Quinnipiac, Wappinger and Pogosit people, otherwise known colonially as New Haven, Connecticut. That's where I am zooming in from. So I'm 3 hours in the future from you all at the moment. And it's almost my bedtime, but I'm very happy to be here.
Awesome. Is the world ending where you're at right now?
I think it's ending in different ways all over the country. You know what I mean? Like we're submerged. There are parts of this coast that are like submerged underwater still from the rains that have been happening, you know, from the hurricane that made its way from fucking New Orleans all the way up here last week. Mm-hmm. It's just so wild. I actually just spent Labor Day weekend in Washington, D.C., and I took the train down. It's about a 6-hour train ride. And on my way down there, I was still seeing areas that were like submerged underwater and like cars that were like half submerged that were abandoned, you know, by their owners, just like left in the street. And it's still flooded. It's kind of wild. But luckily, like, and I know there's a lot of people in Connecticut specifically and some of the surrounding areas from where I live were affected and like dealt with flooding and everything. But thankfully, that didn't really happen. Like, I didn't lose any power. My house sits on kind of like a steep little like hill of a driveway. So any rain that did come just kind of like flowed downward anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but I'm here. I'm alive and breathing.
I'm glad you're safe, man. I know people who were deeply affected by the floods and whatnot. And so it's in different ways. And so it's good that you are safe with everything and we're able to travel safe and all that stuff. It's crazy. It's a crazy time to live in America right now. I mean, anywhere in the world, not just America. It's pretty crazy to be alive.
Yeah, to be existing in this moment, this current time.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, Joey, what do you do for a living? Like, what, I know you at APU, you're a double major.
right?
You would think. I like changed it around a lot in the first like couple years until I think my second semester of sophomore year is when I finally settled into what I ended up, you know, finishing my course of studies in. And so I majored in theater and I minored in business admin.
That's right. That's right. And so now you're and doing now, that, right?
As yeah, essentially pretty much. I am a regional and off-Broadway theater producer.
That is so badass. What the hell?
I mean, it's and I'll say too, I'm like really grateful to still be able to say that given the last year and a half that we've had, and particularly yeah. like my industry relies on gathering people in space in close proximity with each other. And so it's been really challenging. And I have very gratefully remained employed during the whole time. And so we like pivoted to the virtual space. And I also produce a podcast as well. And before the pandemic, we would record it live and in person in a studio in New York City. And then we, you know, started doing it this way via Zoom and everything. And we had like, we produced an entire season last year virtually. But in the way it was kind of great because it like gave us more access to folks and being able to like talk to people who were not even in our time zone and be able to like put content out there. So yeah. in like weird nuanced ways, it was sort of like this it gave us opportunities but also like really scaled us back in what we're just used to doing and how we're used to producing.
Totally. Yeah, no, it's definitely changed. I think every industry for the most part has probably had a change in some way. And so I think I saw someone where like most of the major corporations, like Fortune 500 country companies, aren't going to be sending people abroad for meetings anymore because they're like, they can just freaking set up a Zoom meeting, like FaceTime or Google Hangouts. I've gotten like 3 Google Hangout meetings last week. I'm like, can you all like get on it? Like, Google Hangout sucks ass.
Google Hangout, I don't like it. The formatting is so that like you, that design, it's not great.
Yeah, hit me up on my Discord. I'm at them cheesy boys at
is that really your Discord?
No. Oh. my Discord is my Lone Star Jake. So
because if it was them cheesy boys, that'd actually be really funny.
But I wish. No. You want to know what my old gamer tag was? I swear to God, if any of you people out there leak this, I'm coming after you personally. My old gamer tag was Epic Guitar 64.
I think that was still your name on something.
It probably.
Because I think it's on Switch.
No, not anymore.
Oh, well.
It was. It definitely was.
Yeah, because I remember seeing that.
Huh. Yep.
Yeah. Well, anyways, Joey, what's your podcast name? What's it about? Yeah. I honestly didn't even know. I probably saw that on some social media at some point, just like I did with the Speaking in Church podcast, but was under a rock and was like, I'll get around to it one day and then forgot.
I mean, it's totally fine. We do it and it's just like, it's part of like one of my jobs. And so we put it out there and we have like an audience, but we're not, you know, we're not, I don't know, whether that like NPR podcast, like, oh, however many like it, millions yeah. of viewers or listeners. The podcast that I produce is called Soul Talk. And it is a branch of this initiative that I work with called the Soul Project. The Soul Project is a national theater initiative that amplifies the voices of Latinx playwrights and artists of color in New York City and beyond. And Soul Talk is kind of like another way that we do that in just, you know, we interview Latinx identifying artists and listen to their stories, their lives, what they make. You know, we talk to folks of varying backgrounds and artistic backgrounds. And generally speaking, it's mostly been theater because we are, you know, theater focused, but, you know, we have people that have also like done film and television and whatnot, but the, you know, it's essentially creating a space for Latinx identifying artists to be able to just share their stories and be heard.
That's really awesome. I was, I mean, I don't know if you follow Joe Lumen at all, or I know I do, but I don't know if anyone else does. But Joe Lumen, I think we've talked. This is actually the correct way of saying her name, I believe. Joe Lumen. I said Luemon last podcast episode. It's Lumen. She was talking about on another podcast about how Latinx people are less likely to create art and do the things that you see a lot of the Black community do. And I was talking about it with a friend as well, because you know, I think the last year we saw Black Lives Matter protests that were happening, but then we saw like the whole thing surrounding Adam Toledo, and the Latinx community didn't really do much. But there were some, there's some activating, whatever the term is.
Activists,
yeah, I guess some protests and stuff, but it wasn't like on the scale of Black Lives Matter. Then we have a Stop Asian Hate movement, which was big as well. And working at an AAPI organization, I kind of see a little bit of behind the scenes work that's happening, at least on a political level, with the Asian American and Pacific Islander community. But when I was talking about it with a friend, it was interesting to know that with the Black community, they have they have a different yet similar experience to the rest of the quote unquote colored or the BIPOC community, right? Where there has been some sort of suppression, there has been colonialization, there has been slavery, there has been genocide, there's been a lot of different things that have happened, but the Black community has been removed enough to be able to say, I don't give a fuck what the white person says. I'm going to create art for the sake of creating art. But the Latinx community and even the Asian community and Pacific Islander community has often been more of, I don't want to do this because I don't want to upset the white person, or I don't want them to reject it. I want to make them happy. Which is interesting. But then you have like your organization or your company that is doing the opposite of that, which is saying, no, there's voices here and there's like playwrights here that need to be heard. Mm-hmm. And we're going to highlight that. And we're going to really push for more of that. And like, I think the best form of criticism against a system, a world system, or you know, even white supremacy is going to be that artistic creation. It's music, it's art, it's plays, it's theater, it's, you know, you name it, it's a bunch of different things. So I think that's just super cool that exists, especially as someone who is a white passing Latinx person, who if I wanted to be in playwright, like that gives me an opportunity more than trying to make it big in Hollywood or on Broadway. Like if I wanted to do that, like it would be so fucking hard, but having a place that's actually advocating for me would be freaking awesome. So like, yeah, I just think that's super cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an initiative that my boss, who's the artistic director of the initiative, it was like really a vision that he nurtured for like over the course of like the last decade, and they officially launched 5 years ago in 2016, and I joined them in January of 2019. And you know, over the course of that time, I started off as the producing assistant, and now I'm the associate producer. And we've, you know, been able, the sort of like main tenet and goal of the initiative is to have 12 playwrights produced with 12 different like off-Broadway theaters, and get those plays produced on that scale, and to sort of like start or be a catalyst for this change that can happen. And of course, like New York City being the place that it is, and having the influence that it has over the American theater, like that sort of like putting it at the center of this allows us to, you know, create like a huge shift, right, in the American theater. We've already, out of those 12 productions, 5 have been done. And so there's still some ways to go, but yeah, that's sort of the objective, is to be this like catalyst and for the theaters that we partner with, for them to make this commitment that they're always going to include at least one Latinx playwright in their seasons from then on, right? To kind of like, yeah, instigate that more seismic shift. And then once those 12 have been achieved, then you know, the initiative essentially sunsets, because it's not meant to be something that lasts or exists in perpetuity in that sense, but to like something to kind of like push for change and create that shift, and to allow others to kind of, you know, investigate themselves, unpack all of their shit. Because I, you know, the American theater is just another system that exists in this country that is rooted within white supremacy and racism and and exclusion. And so that's where we are right now. And then, and especially, you know, like you were mentioning, like over the course of the last year and a half with protests and people just being fed up with not being seen or heard. That's a really critical moment right now to be doing that self-assessment and just creating a more shifting. I think like really shifting from a culture that is so focused on productivity that it deprioritizes like the human beings that are involved in the process, and actually like prioritizing a culture of care and making sure that people are being taken care of and being cared for, and giving them the space to be able to like exist and be their full selves and bring their full selves into their work, and create something really special. Because like you said too, you know, storytelling in general is like a way for us to make sense of this world that we live in, right? It's not all just like, we don't always like just make sense of things through linear ways, you know, and kind of bringing it back to like religion too. Like, you know, Jesus spoke in parables, right? That's how like he taught, that's how we like learned how to live the way, the truth, the life. If you identify as a Christian, if that's your truth, if that's the way that you make sense of the world, that being told, like speaking through story is what helps us, you know, understand things in a way that is just not so linear.
That's really good. I mean, even a lot of the stuff that you're saying about Christianity and all that stuff, like Jesus, he spoke in parables, and I mean, I think a lot of the Psalms are all forms of artistic expression, right? Even I would argue the Proverbs in its own way, even though it's like all wisdom literature, it's kind of wisdom poetry in a sense. I don't know, maybe I'm off base. Biblical scholars, shut the fuck up, get off my back. I don't care. I think we'll end up getting into some more of those conversations as we go. We're going to shift gears a little bit to kind of talk about, like, we both went to a specific university. We both had different experiences. We're both white passing Latinx people, you know, and first off, I think when we first met, we were just talking about it right before we started like actually recording, where I think we started meeting on like a Facebook group for all the incoming freshmen. And you, me, my friend Andy, and then also Matt Alfaro, who's one of your, Andy, if you're listening,
shout out to Andy.
I think Andy might be listening. I don't know, I've heard he's listened before. But then also Matt Alfaro, which I liked what you said in the Speaking Truth podcast. We're like, shout out to Matt wherever you are and whatever you're doing. That's a mood. Even at EP, I barely saw the guy. But like, I remember like the four of us were all like friends, and like we created a little like crew when we first moved into APU, like you, me, Andy, Brandon, was it JoJo, Jasmine, like we were all chilling and hanging out all the time. It was a fun time because we all moved in early, had jobs or whatever, you know, beforehand. But like, man, our time at APU was, I feel like, the start of so many conversations and so much bullshit, you know, that happened in terms of the institutional level. Like, I mean, I mentioned before on the podcast how APU is kind of where I started to, you know, if you want to call it deconstruct or whatever you want to, whatever term you want to say, where I started really questioning a lot of what I was taught growing up. And I was presented with different things in our Bible classes, which you and I had, I think a couple of them, because we had like, what, Bruner's CLFM class, I think we had together. We had Romans and Galatians. and then did we also have speech with Marsha Berry?
No, I did not. I did not have Marsha Berry for my speech class.
Okay, well, shout out to Marsha Berry. You were, I have no nice words for you. Bruner, awesome. And Keith Reeves, you keep on with your with your political posts. But like, I learned a lot in Romans and Galatians, and that's where I was like, huh, the Bible's not against homosexuality. Got it. That's like the first time that I heard that from a, you know, person. But with at APU, like a few of the events that just come to mind for me, and you might remember a lot of it, like where we had the professor, I think our freshman year, maybe it was our sophomore year, who came out as trans and was fired and all that other stuff. And the theology department like had a huge uproar about it because they're a well-loved professor. They like were really great for a lot of the students. I don't know if you remember Spencer Rickman, but I remember Spencer Rickman, who was also struggling with a lot of that stuff at the time, was also deeply hurt. And we would have a lot of conversations about that professor who left. And then we had everything happen with the door discussion.
Yes, the door of discussion. Yes.
Where everyone came out on a door that was public to everyone. We had like different hate crimes against LGBTQ people at APU happen. And then after we left, I don't know if you've paid attention to any of it, but a couple of years ago, they changed the student handbook to where they were now accepting and affirming of like same-sex relationships on campus. But then a couple of weeks later, the board of directors said, no, so-and-so did this on their own accord. We did not approve this. And it was all because they lost money. They lost donations. Like that was literally the only, you can't change the student handbook without board approval. So they approved it, but they're just throwing, you know, this individual under the bus and all that other shit. And, but now I guess they've gone back. The underground LGBTQ club that we had, Haven, is now an official club, although they changed the name because the board didn't like the word Haven, I guess. I forgot what the actual name was. But so we had like so much stuff happening. And I think you and I had a few conversations throughout that time. I was just kind of in a place where I was like, what the fuck is going on? But like, if you're willing to share, and you can also just say no, whatever, but it's up to you. But like, what was like your, like, I would love to hear your experience with that. I do remember going to the door of discussion and seeing like your picture up there, one of the first ones, if not the first, who was saying like, yeah, this is who I am, this is what I identify as. And it was essentially a big fuck you to everyone. And I remember going there, I was like, hell yeah, let's go, fight the system. But like, yeah, if you have any thoughts, any things that you would want to share about that, I think that would be an interesting conversation to have, because that's like a big institution that was making a stance, and you were one of the people who was standing up against it, which was really dope to see.
Yeah, I think yes, and you know, I'm not opposed to speaking about any of this. Where do I even start? I think, so I'll say this. So that was our sophomore year. I went into APU. I like made the personal decision to go there. And I had been out as gay since I was 14. So since my freshman year of high school, and, you know, attending church and everything, I got baptized at 15. I made that decision myself. You know, it was like not influenced by the adults in my life at all. And when I learned about APU, I was like, wow, I can like intersect my faith with my education. That sounds pretty rad, because I'm enjoying, you know, expanding my faith and building a community and developing like a chosen family. If anything, I think the church for me was my first exposure to like chosen family than like queer people were. I was getting a little bit of that, you know, through school, but I was like really developing like deep relationships with folks through church. So going into APU, I was in the place where I was at a church. I had been attending a church that was really affirming. I wouldn't say explicitly. I knew that people knew. I never explicitly said in church that I was gay, and no one ever like questioned me about it, but we all just knew. And the fact that like nobody treated me differently because of it, I just felt so affirmed and welcomed. And so I got a taste of what it was like to identify as a queer person and also have that exist in my identity that I was finding and developing within religion. So I went into APU with that attitude, and unfortunately not a lot of people felt the same way. So yeah. Like over the course, even of the first like few months, even of the course of the first semester, like already, you know, and I mean, like, call it naive, I was 18, so like, of course I'm like, oh yes, you know, the world is a lovely place and people come together and we're here at school and we're like, we're gonna embrace each other for our differences. But I also was like wanting to be very unapologetic of the fact that I was queer, and I didn't want to like necessarily hide it. So that was sort of my attitude going in, was that I was going to like, I was never gonna hide it. I would, if it was relevant to the conversation, I would definitely bring it up in the class, and just be really unapologetic about it, and be an example of someone that like had reconciled the faith with their sexuality. And then our sophomore year is when that happened with Adam, when Adam came out as trans, and then very shortly afterwards, after coming out publicly, was fired from APU. And it sparked obviously like a whole conversation and a lot of news. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence came and protested outside the school, which was incredible.
I did not know about that.
Yes, if you don't know who the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are, please look them up. They are an incredible activist group that have existed for decades. I believe they are based in San Francisco, but it is like a queer activist group, and they like get up in nun drag and paint their faces. It's incredible. But yeah, they came and protested outside the school right in between APU and Chick-fil-A.
perfect combo.
And yeah, and so, and again, like you mentioned, at the time, Haven was underground. It was not something that was sponsored by the school, so we always met off campus. And actually, just a few weeks before the whole brouhaha of everything, Adam had come to Haven, and that was when I had met him for the very first time, and we had this like incredible moment with him, and I was just like so in awe of this person who was so full of wisdom and just love and compassion, and also like very passionate about teaching the Bible. Like they were, yeah, they taught in the theology department, and I was just like, it was I think maybe like the biggest moment where I was, oh, there's like a chance here. There is a chance to kind of like affirm our identities within this person. Like knows, has like spent a lot of their life, you know, studying this and sharing this knowledge. And when everything happened, you know, we came together, our little underground group, and we said that we were gonna make ourselves known to the community, because it seemed like a lot of people didn't even realize. They're like, we were hearing like, oh, gay people go to APU, and it's like, yes, Linda.
Yeah, yes, Linda. They exist. Oh, it's funny because I'm thinking of someone with that name who would have said that.
Yes, we exist. We have for since the dawn of time, since human beings have existed. We queer and trans people and non-binary people, we have been here. And so the action was that we would create little like profiles essentially of ourselves with, you know, of course, if we were comfortable doing so, some folks, you know, we could like attach our picture to it. Some folks decided not to and remained anonymous, but identified like, yes, I'm a student that goes here and I identify as, you know, whatever, and this is what I want to say. But, and then there were some of us like myself who like posted our picture, our name, our year, what we were studying, and like whatever we wanted to say and like share to the community. And then someone, you know, took all those, printed them out, and went like in the middle of the night and posted all of them up on what was the Door of Discussion, which was essentially this like, it was sort of like this place, this like place where anyone can go and literal post door. Their 95 theses, you know, have their like, yes, live their Martin Luther fantasy.
But that's what this was. It was like the 95 theses of the queer community at APU, which was, like, I remember saying that. I was like, this is like the 95 theses. This is fucking badass.
And essentially what? Because we, like, there was enough of us where we covered the whole thing. It was like this slab of wood that existed on the main campus at the university. And yeah, it was like this like public bulletin board where people would post things. Yeah, right. Yeah, right next to all the student mailboxes. So at some point, everyone was going to cross paths with it, you know. Yeah, and so we like covered that entire door, and it sparked a huge conversation. And then other people were responding with their own notes. Some people saying thank you. Some people saying like, I'm so scared, I can't come out, but I like seeing this like makes me at least like relieves me a little bit. And other people who were people who identified themselves as allies, and other people who, you know, identified themselves as not allies. You know, we kind of expected all that. And it was just, I think, you know, if anything, it was at least an act of solidarity and an acknowledgement of the community existing. And it's like, it essentially was like, you can't ignore us because we're here. And we're queer. And you're going to have to get used to it. So that, yeah, I think that was definitely like one of the highlights for me being at APU. And even, I think, I don't know if it was the same semester or it might have been the following semester, but that I took Luke and Axe. And that, you know, for those who might be unfamiliar, you might not be if you're listening to this podcast, but you know, the story of Jesus. Yeah. And I was really grateful for the professor that I had, because, and he became like so highly recommended by other peers. John Manning.
Ooh, John Manning, yeah.
Incredible. Love him forever. One of our required texts for reading in the class was Reading the Bible from the Margins by Miguel de la Torre. And that for me, like, really also just kind of blew my mind, because I was reading something where this person was actually expanding and elaborating on like what it means to believe in Jesus as an oppressed person, you know, in this day and age. And I remember from reading that book, like, he had sections in it where like he had subsections, and one was titled like the Black Christ, one was the Asian Christ, one was the Gay Christ, you know, things like that. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm actually like reading this, and we're about to go and discuss this in class and everything. And so for me, I think that was just like essentially like that's what you're supposed to be doing when you're like in college, right? Yeah. You start to kind of, you question everything that you've ever known, and you expand your mind and you learn about it. And if it like doesn't align with you already thought, then, you know, you're opening yourself up to new ideas. And, you know, there were folks who were like not okay with it. And that was one of the times where I explicitly stated like in class to a room full of people, that I was gay, and that, you know, that wasn't going to change in any way, and I wasn't going to like hide that ever. And, you know, and that I was at the time, you know, practicing Christianity and developing my faith and my relationship with Christ. And yeah, I think it's that, you know, slowly started to change over the course of like the following years, to where I am now at this point, sort of like completely disassociated with the church in general.
Yeah, which I do want to get into that, but I do want to bring up, like, it's fascinating that you brought up Reading the Bible Through the Margins, because our experience with that book was different. And the reason why it was different wasn't because of what was presented in it, because I remember reading the book and really loving that my voice was finally being heard as a Latinx male, right? Like, for all my life, I was being told of one specific way to read the Bible. But then this one, I was like, wait, Jesus wasn't white. Wait, there's other things there. But then, and God, this pisses me off still. And this is where my own trauma comes in and everything. But like, I remember my class, I mean, it was APU, which was at the time like 80% white, something like that. And everyone was like, I fucking hate this book. And like, I mean, this class, for those of you who are listening, we had two classes that were required. Everyone had to take it at APU, and I think they still do. One is on Exodus and Deuteronomy, where they go over the entire first five books of the Bible, aka the Torah, or the Pentateuch. And then the other is Luke and Acts, where we go through the book of Luke and Acts, and you talk about, you know, Jesus and his life and started the church and everything. And so reading the Bible through the margins was a required text by the time we became sophomores, because that's when they universalized the class for everyone, so it all had to be teaching the same thing, which was stupid for some of the professors, because my professor sucked ass. On Rickman professor, I was told he was really good, but what he taught was different than I think what he was forced to teach. Anyways, point with all that being said, I felt like my voice as a Latinx male was being suppressed. Not felt, it was suppressed. It wasn't felt, like it was suppressed. People mm-hmm. were telling me that I had to read this book in a certain way, that I had to, it made me feel like I had to hate it because it wasn't perpetuating their stereotype. And I gave in. Mm-hmm. I sold the book and I was like, oh, this is the worst book I've ever read. And then years later now, I'm like, oh, at first I wish I still had that book, and I actually have it on my list because I'm going to rebuy it and read through it now. But like, it's just a fascinating idea where like you were one person who always spoke up about everything, which was really great and something that I really always admired about you. But then on my end, I always suppressed myself or allowed myself to be suppressed by the other voices, the dominant voices in the room, which I feel impacted my reading of that book, because I think there's a lot of importance in reading different perspectives of Jesus, the Black Jesus, the Asian Jesus, the Latinx Jesus, the queer Jesus, you know, whatever different things, like reading the Bible from those different lenses is so important, I think, for everyone. So I just thought that was really interesting that you brought that up. And I think you spoke about that in speaking in church. And when I heard that, I was like, why did I give in to that? Because it's an important thing. And I do also want to mention, I always found it ironic, especially with all the stuff about with Adam that happened, but how conservative or traditional the institution was. But then mm-hmm. when you go into the theology department, Adam wasn't alone. Mm-hmm. The entire I remember even years later, I would talk to some of my ministry professors and would mention Adam's name, and they would have an immediate look of sadness. And it was ironic mm-hmm. because I don't think there are some, I can't say that there were none, but Eddie Pugh, the irony is everyone in the theology department, well, at least in this sense, from the conversations that I would have and things that I would pick up, were very progressive in many different ways, mm-hmm. all over the spectrum. But like, I remember you and I took a class on Romans and Galatians. I remember there was one thing that a professor at one point had said that I think you were like, no, that's wrong. I think you said similar to what you said in John Manning's class, where you're like, no, I'm gay and that's not gonna change, and I'm here. and I remember Keith Reeves just kind of being there like, stunned for a moment. But I do remember a lot of what they were saying was just talking about the historical context between all of that. And so they were saying mm-hmm. their own thing, but like a lot of my ministry professors, the theology professors I would have, they're always like, yeah, no, the Bible actually doesn't say a lot of what the evangelical church has been saying for the last 100 or so years. It actually mm-hmm. says very different. Like what Keith Reeves was saying was very specific about, like, Paul was specifically talking against power struggles instead of like, you know, actual homosexuality or whatever, mm-hmm. which is like just a fascinating different thing. But I just found it always, always fascinating across the board, even when it came to stupid things like chapel requirements, of how progressive the school of theology was, the people who actually spend the time reading this thing, this literally mm-hmm. giant big red Bible that we had that we all called Big Red, and lugged around and freaking broke our backs for. So shut up. If you say pick up your cross and follow me, shut the fuck up. If you have not picked up a fucking red, big red NRSV Bible, full Bible commentary with the Apocrypha.
The Apocrypha. Oh my God.
You can't say shit. You can't say shit. I did pick up my cross for 5 fucking years. That goddamn institution. Now I have 50,000 in freaking debt. So shut up. All for Jesus. But
I carried my cross and all I got was financial compensation.
Is that a shirt? Yeah. Is that a shirt? Maybe. That's a shirt. And I'm going to get AP's logo and it's going on there. I don't care. They can sue me. But what are you going to get? More money? Fuck you. I liked AP, but whatever. But point being is it was just funny how I always just found that interesting with the people who actually said the shit that they that the institution bases everything off of was so much more progressive, and literally gave a list of reasons why the school was wrong. The school would often dismiss it. It's like, oh, no. We can't be a Christian institution if we allow the gays. We can't be a Christian institution if we cancel chapel. We're going to be just like Harvard.
Did you know?
And it's like,
which is so funny, because you would think that, and if you really think about it, if you're going to call yourself a Christian institution, that's exactly what you should be doing, is accepting everyone that comes to your doors. Like that's the idea of church,
but if you're Mormon or if you're Muslim or Buddhist or you're atheist, you can come to APU, but you're gonna have to go to our chapel and be indoctrinated. Actual rule. I mean, not in those words. The only, like, you could get out of chapel for very specific reasons, and sometimes it would be religion.
Sometimes,
not always. No, they still say you have to go to chapel. Or no, you can skip chapel, but you still have to go to our Bible classes. That's what it was. You wouldn't be excluded from the Bible classes. Right. You'd be excluded from chapel. That's bullshit.
That is some real bullshit.
Yeah. So in terms of religion, they're accepting, but not affirming. But then if you're anything else, no. You don't exist at our school. No, you're Joe, you're a straight white male.
I mean, if I was, I'd be a lot further than where I am right now, but
there it is.
Truth be told.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like I said, by the time I was a senior, you know, I was already kind of at my wit's end, and I was like just not vibing with the oppression, not vibing with the cause. And it took, you know, it took me leaving and then having to, you know, after I graduated, I moved to San Francisco, started working there, and had like quite the culture shock. San Francisco, and it, you know, especially like when I first moved there, I lived just outside the Castro district. That was like a really big culture shock from being at APU for 4 years, you know.
Yeah.
It was just like it was so different to see rainbows painted on the ground and rainbow flags like everywhere, and just kind of like being like, oh, I'm so affirmed here, but it feels like not right, because I'm so used to sort of like adjusting myself in order to fit whatever they wanted me to be. And then you know, sort of my entry point, I guess, to sort of I'll say like decolonizing my worldview was I started to access that through examining my gender identity, you know, and going to drag shows all the time and starting to meet more gender variant people who are variant in their gender expression, and eventually like coming to a point where I now identify as non-binary, you know, and not necessarily gay either. I use the word queer now too, as my like sexual identification, and that for me is like, it's ever evolving, and it continues to be like central to like my decolonizing practice that isn't rooted in strict binaries like man or woman or, you know, black and white or, you know, whatever. It's allowed me to feel more myself and create this access point to my spirituality too. Y'all have talked about like tarot before too on the podcast. I had a friend that gifted me a tarot deck at the beginning of 2020, before the world went to shit. And it's actually a tarot deck that's rooted in like activism and social justice. And so it's called the New World Tarot Deck. The design is and like the booklet that comes with it that kind of like, you know, kind of like acts as your guide as you're learning how to read through it is rooted in like anti-oppression and social justice. And so, you know, when everything shut down and we were at home all the time, I started like taking online classes to learn how to read it and like using that deck specifically and developing an access point for me to get more connected spiritually and find something that fit more to my life in order to help me understand and make sense of the world, right? And yeah. Live some sort of like practice and build a faith in something, and connect more with the universe, nature, the creator, because essentially it's all the same thing across the board. It's just like different words for it, right?
Yeah,
you know,
totally. Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I read a lot of Richard Rohr, but also like I just read a lot of different people in general. And like, I was even thinking of this at APU because I think it was my Exodus Deuteronomy class. This is the class that really changed my perspective of the Bible in general. Like, we had to read the creation narrative from different religions, and then later on in another mm-hmm. class, we read Jesus account. Like, it was my Life of Jesus class where we read through different religions' accounts of Jesus and like their perspective of everything. Everyone mm-hmm. says the same shit,
mm-hmm.
and some of it's more beautiful than us. And oh, what podcast was I listening to today? It might have been the Dirty Rotten Church Kids at one point, where one of them was saying like, yeah, it was Dirty Rotten Church Kids, where Josh Link was saying like, like if you look at Jesus and you look at the words that he said, and you just look at him as a mystic, not necessarily like as God, but you just look at him as a mystic, and you pay attention to the fact that like a lot of other religions look at what Jesus said as great wisdom literature, and you just mm-hmm. read that and you think about the implications that his words have on humanity and the human experience, and there's like some great, beautiful things that he said. There's certain things that he said that were a bit exclusionary that he's like, I don't know about that. Like, I am the way, the truth, and life, whatever. Like that, I'm like, I don't know about the inclusion stuff. But then he's like, but then after Jesus, there's a lot of other stuff that came as well through philosophy, psychology, other religions, whatever. That adds on to that. And Richard Rohr is often known as the universalist because he says a lot of the same thing where he's, and I've said it on this podcast so many times, but I freaking love it, where the universe, like this idea of the Christ is... Like when people often quote, you know, John 1 as, you know, like in the beginning was the word was with God, and the word was God, meaning the Bible. Like, it's not talking about the Bible. It's literally a gospel that is talking about Jesus and his life. So the word was Jesus, not the Bible. Fundamentalists, get angry, please DM us. We will blast you on everything. But like, it was talking about Jesus, and like, in the beginning was Jesus. In the beginning was the Christ, and the Christ was with God, and the Christ was God. That's a universalist statement. In the beginning, before everything was created, there was this entity. And in science, I think they would call it, I don't even know what it's called, dark matter or something like that, like the thing that's in between all of our minds. I don't fucking know. I'm not a scientist. You know, Mike, you can, science Mike McHigg talks about it a lot. You already mentioned it like briefly in their book, Finding God in the Ways. It was fascinating. But like, you know, like, and I've said before, like where the Christ is this like universal concept, kind of like midichlorians in Star Wars, you know, where it's like in everything. It's like the thing that makes up everything, right? It connects us all, right? And so like that's how I think of this idea of the cosmic Christ, which Saint Bonaventure came up with, and Saint Francis of Assisi talked a lot about, and then now Richard Rohr talks a lot about, and then now we get to like Rob Bell, and you get to like a bunch of the other people that evangelicals really hate, fundamentalists really hate. But this like universal Christ concept is so much bigger than everything, where like Jesus is like, yeah, I am the way, the truth, and life, which we've taken as you have to be Christian. No, Jesus was saying, no, like I am the way, as in my life, the things that I do, like not necessarily just the beliefs that I have, but like how I love people is the way and the truth and the life that mm-hmm. you are to live. Mm-hmm. Not be Christian. It has nothing to do with Christian. It doesn't have nothing to do with even necessarily believing in him. He's saying no one can get to God, no one can get to the divine except by living the life that I'm living, which is loving your neighbor, loving yourself, and in turn, that's loving the divine images within each of us. And each religion, each philosophy really speaks into that idea in different ways. You know, like you have one that's talking about reaching nirvana, you have Buddhism, that's the way is that I'm not good at all my religions, there's a lot of them out there, but like I think you can understand what I'm saying. But like there's a lot of different religions that kind of talk about this idea of reaching God. Like that's kind of humanity's point from the beginning of time, was how do we reach God? What's out there? What's beyond us? Why are we here? And all of it has been, how do we get to them?
And see, I find that interesting, because I'm of the belief that we do have access to that within ourselves, right? Because yes. if we are made of the Creator, then that means that we have that piece of the Creator within us, right? Exactly. And that things like meditation or being connected with nature, respecting the earth,
yes,
you know, because we are connected, yes. You know, like spending time with appreciating what has been given to us and treating it well is our way of being able to access that cosmic energy. Because yes. You know, I will say that I believe that, like, I'm everything and I'm nothing all at once, you know, that ooh. I hold all of that within me, and I also release it. Yeah. And I think what I hope to continue to grow in is being comfortable with uncertainty.
Yes.
And allowing speaking that
my language
to allowing that to kind of like, yeah. And because why do we need so much certainty, right? Yeah. Things only have meaning because we give it to them. Like the words that we're literally speaking right now only have meaning because we've given them meaning. Over the course of like thousands of years, so yeah. That we could communicate with one another, and what for, so we could tell stories, what for, so we can make ooh. Sense of the world, you know, like it's like yeah. I hope to continue along that journey of being okay with uncertainty, because then it allows for like a wealth of possibilities that yeah. that and more it creates more of like an expansion of like what my life in particular, my own particular life, can be and yeah. will become and you also get to experience that through other people, because if that yeah. if you hold that to be true to yourself, then that means that's true to other people are also an extension of that divine being. Right. I remember taking Christianity in the creative process at APU.
Oh, yeah.
A professor had us watch a TED Talk from Elizabeth Gilbert, a white woman, I know, but it was a kind of a brilliant TED Talk.
It's a white woman instead of a white man. So that's a win.
But she ate, she prayed, she loved, you know what I mean? That was her. That's her.
Oh no.
That's her. But she does give this TED Talk about the elusive creative genius, and how like and talks about this idea of like, you know, this is particularly focused on creatives, quote unquote, artists, whatever, but that when you are creating, and I think you actually mentioned this on one of your episodes that I was just listening to, that when you're making something, you're kind of like leaving a piece of you behind with it, right? It's like taking yeah. a piece of yourself and you're putting it into this other thing, but it's also like you connecting with that divine, with yeah. that otherworldliness, and allowing that to come through you, or maybe not even necessarily that, to kind of like maybe like link what I was saying earlier. It's accessing that part that is already yeah. in you
yep.
and opening yourself up to, you know, with your vulnerability, with all of your humanity, and allowing yourself to be creative. I think when those things are suppressed, it's a lot easier for people to kind of like fall victim to being controlled very easily. There's a reason yeah. why the horrific things that have happened in the world started with things like reducing access to knowledge, burning books, you know.
Yeah.
Reducing people's ideas of like what can be, and leaving them with like only, you know, small certainties, and making them having a view of themselves that is very small. Because when you have access to that part of yourself that is bigger than everything else, then that means that there's like a world of more possibility, a world that is more accepting, that is more loving, that is more compassionate and more inclusive of diversity and access and care for other people. And intersectionality is also like a huge part of all of that. Everything, and you know, I think what really like kicked me off of Christianity too is that I was like anything that I could see wrong in history, I was tracing back to like Christianity and like the justification that was used in order to allow for those things to happen or to like commit those atrocities amongst people, to force people into believing it, to killing them if they didn't do it, you know. All those things. So it was and it's also like, you know, rooted in racism and white supremacy, like everything's all just tied in together. And so being able to take the time to unpack all of that is like a lifelong practice, right?
Yeah. No, there's a lot. I have another thing that I really like that you said. But I do want to give Jake space because he hasn't spoken much and people in our podcast have previously said, Jake, fucking speak. And I've been trying to, I've been motioning to him, but he's just been playing with a fidget cube that I can't, and then almost falling asleep because it's Jake.
I didn't almost fall asleep. I was listening.
Oh, okay.
Just weird. I'm not that ADHD. And if you are, I'm sorry. All right. I think one of the weird things that popped into my head, and this may or may not be related to anything we've been talking about, because one of the perks of having ADHD is that you'll have intrusive thoughts that just pop into your head. You'll hear like some small segment of something, and then all of a sudden your brain goes on a tangent.
That's me literally all the time.
Yeah. And so one of the things that I thought of was we were mentioning how like limiting access of knowledge and how people were murdering other people because they thought it was within their divine right and within their faith to do so. And it brought me back to I was watching, admittedly, I was watching Doctor Who.
Nice.
But trust me, it'll come back around. In this episode, they went back to when the witch trials were happening. Right. And so a lot of the language that they were using is that they are like that all the people there were ordained by God, and the people that they were murdering was within their divine right in order to rid Satan of this place, and like evil stuff, like evil, clearly misogynist, because it was always women that were getting literally drowned to death, because that is how you did witch trials back in the day. It was the biggest twist is that the demons were inside the people who were performing these witch hunts in the first place. And by demons, it actually meant aliens, because it's Doctor Who, fucking whatever. But I mean, but like at the same time, it's like because we have like created this entire space where we have to like, or I guess not we, but like in the past, and I guess it still carries on today. We've created this space where it's like we have to like almost like crusade and be okay with committing like mass genocide, because it is, after all, what quote unquote God wills. When in actuality, people were using God's name in literal vain in order to do the most fucked up shit.
Yeah.
And so, and like, it's not only for like, you know, it's not only for the witch trials, obviously, like it's continued today, where you'll have like Christian protesters like on the streets with signs that say the most like horrible and like disrespectful, like, and clearly like they don't listen to anyone but themselves.
Well, I mean, it's also a lot of hypocrisy. I mean, if we're gonna trigger warning, we should probably record a trigger warning earlier. But I mean, trigger warning with everything that's been happening recently with everything with abortion, with Texas and everything, like, it's also a lot of hypocrisy. And I mean, I as a male who does not have any female reproductive organs, I'm not going to speak into it because it's not my place to speak into this at all. But my point with all of this is, we exclude and we there's two reasons why genocides happen. Okay, because like the indigenous genocide, the Holocaust, we could even go to the Armenian genocide, we could even go with what's happening in Afghanistan right now, and that's with different religions right there. That's not just Christianity. So that happens with a lot of different religions, ironically or not ironically, mostly Islam and Christianity and Judaism, all Abrahamic religions. But point with all that is, there are two things that often happen with genocide. One, you have a divine ruling who's telling you you need to do X, Y, and Z, which is that really the divine ruling, or is that just you saying that, you trying to use that for power? Just my thought. And then second, you have a dehumanization of the other, whatever the other is. So in America, we have the other being someone who's Black, we have someone who is queer, we have unborn babies, we have, or the mothers who have those babies, we have so many, sorry, I should say not unborn babies, but we have like the mothers who want to have abortions that are the others. We have Asian folk, we have anyone who's not white, really, white, a white man. And it's all, it always comes down to power. It always comes down to, if I know who is in, then I can know who is out. And if I know who is out, then I can make sure that I'm in. Because if I'm in, then I still have power.
And you know, you're bringing me back to like the very beginning when you were talking about sometimes folks, like non-Black people of color, wanting to, I don't want to like misquote you, but essentially sort of like please the oppressor in a way, because I mean, because ultimately it's a lot of these things are rooted in anti-Blackness, right? And so then you have non-Black people of color who will assimilate to whiteness in such a way where it's like they still end up holding power over people who are Black and dark skinned. And don't want to give that up because it's giving them access to something. And that's why there are times where like people will not speak up and fight for others who are experiencing more oppression because they have found an access point and are not willing to let it go. Because when people gain power, they don't want to, they see that when they start to share it, they see it as like losing power rather than like actually gaining power. Because when we're existing in silos, it's easier to oppress people, and it's easier for you to like hold on to everything that you have. And in reality, when everyone has access, we're actually like, it's for the betterment of like everyone. And I think we're like really starting to learn this now, at least in the circles that I'm in, because not only you know do I exist in like producing art and everything, but like I'm in the place where I am in a lot of conversations of just like, how do we address, you know, anti-Blackness and racism and within the arts, right? And how do we like get this out of our institutions and our practices and our policies and create those spaces that are more centered on care than productivity, and are not oppressive and are being inclusive and not exclusive anymore. Building audiences and letting people know that you know, theater is for them, and that they can have access to it and they can enjoy it and they can see themselves reflected in it. And it's, if it's something that they want to like do with their life, they can do that and not have to like be met with all these awful gatekeepers. Slowly but surely, you know.
Yeah No, it's all really good. I have one more thing that I wanted to bring up, and then we'll move forward, because I know this is already a long episode, but god Damn, this is, I'm loving this conversation.
This is really deep. That's
I'm sorry, kind of been listening I talk too much.
No, you know, like this is really great because, like, I mean, I was even when I was listening to the episode with you with Josie and Spencer, I was like, God damn, Joey, I forgot how like deep you were. Which is my fault. I'm an idiot. But I was like, God, this is like so good. And one thing that you said, and I didn't realize how much I resonated all over, like with the entire quote. You said, growing up and in general with your life, I believe, and hopefully I'm not misquoting you with this. You said, I have always been too white for the brown people, too brown for the white people, too masculine for the feminine people, and too feminine for the masculine people. And that was, if I remember correctly, the context in which you said that was you talking about how you never really fit in with the Latinx community, with the white community at PU, but then even in the queer community, with everything that was going on. Cause like, you know, I think at first when you first came out and before you discovered that you were non-binary was like, you're like, I'm not feminine enough for other gay guys. And I'm not, you know, it was, I think that was kind of what you were talking about. I think something like that. Is that right? Is that quote still accurate or accurate for your past?
Yeah, I would say for my past, I was definitely in the place where, yeah, I was feeling like I was never enough for like whatever group. Yeah. And I was always feeling like torn between two things, right? Like, yeah. I was struggling with trying to experience my full humanity and existing in spaces that where some of me would be acknowledged, but not all of me. And it took me having to leave that space that I existed in for 4 years of my life and actually going out into the world to see that that I did have access to that. I was just like in a place that again, kind of like forces you into silos or to like segment yourself off or compartmentalize yourself. And yeah, that definitely, I wouldn't say that I feel that now. Yeah. I feel that way now. I'm not like too much of anything for anyone. I think that's part of just like growing up yeah. and getting to experience the world and meet a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds. I mean, at this point now, like I feel like I can go anywhere, almost anywhere in this country and know somebody and feel welcome into their home, because that's just like the life that I've lived over the last like 5 years since graduating, is being able to like have access to people and who see me in like all of my fullness, and respect me and celebrate me, and I them, you know, it's reciprocated. Yeah. Mutual relationships and being able to not say that I'm like too much or too little of something, but I am who I am, and that's like that's Joey, and that's celebrated and that's welcomed. Yeah. and I don't have to be anything for anyone. Like the people who do love me, who do appreciate me, and who do value me as a human being are going to do that regardless of like, you know, whether I'm this or that or whatever. So that's definitely changed over the course of the last few years. And I think it's going to continue to change as long as I continue to be around the right people.
Totally.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, that, yeah, like I said, that quote just really hit me as I was listening to it. I was like working out and I was listening to it, I was like, oh God, wait, that's literally been my experience. And granted, I still identify as male and recognize that I am more masculine, but like growing up, and I think I mentioned this in our last episode where I was constantly like my Latinx and Indigenous side was always being suppressed by my white family. Mm-hmm. But then in the Latinx community and Indigenous community, I was always too white because I look white and I recognize that. And I acted white because, or which I guess, what does it mean to act white versus whatever? But I definitely, you know, so like I have that. But then even then, like even in my own family, if I express too many emotions, I was always told that's what a girl does.
Right.
And I'm like, why? And I always was like, why? Why can't I be sad? Why can't I be angry? Why can't I be whatever, experience these emotions? And then, and then other times it was like, I was never told I was too masculine, but I was always told like I had to suppress the feminine side within me. And I was like, this is bullshit. This isn't how it is. Like, we're supposed to really, I think there was someone who was mentioning, one interpretation of like Genesis of, Adam and Eve's story is necessarily about man and woman, but rather this duality that lives within us. Where we have one side of us that is more masculine, or rather has certain traits, and the other is more feminine that has these other traits, which not necessarily talking about the binary, but just talking about how, I think it's more, if I were to add on to it, because actually, wow, holy shit, where it's more of our brain, where we have our left side and our front side. Left side and our right side. Right.
Both. You're just missing a chunk in the corner.
Yeah, just missing a chunk in the corner. Hey, that does happen with some people, and there are different things that causes that, or that can cause. But where one side is more logical, the other side is more creative. One side is more, because logic has typically been with men, and then the other side is more creative, which has typically been women, which is also, both of them are stupid.
Yeah.
Very logical and smart women throughout all of history, and also very creative men. Most of our famous artists. White Jesus came from a man, so he was an artist.
A gay man, too.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. And so the point with all that is, like, yeah, I think that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother time. But, yeah, that all of that was just so good. And Joey, I mean, I'm going to speak for both me and Jake, and also all of our listeners, all of our children out there, that we are just very thankful that you have spent this time with us. Because this is, I think, been very enlightening for myself. I don't know about for Jake, but for myself, it was a very good conversation. It's also cool to like, kind of, you know, catch up in a different setting, in a different way, that I don't think we normally would, which maybe we would over drinks, like if we lived closer to each other, that's probably a reality that would happen. But I think it'd be definitely really cool to talk more about like your decolonization, another time. Cause I think that's a very important conversation to have and to continue to talk about with multiple people of how decolonization looks. And I've never heard of it with decolonization and how that leads to sexuality. I've never read that nor have seen that. And that is just a very fascinating idea that makes sense. And so I think it would be really awesome to have you come on another time to be able to talk more about that. But
absolutely.
Yeah. So Jake, do you have any thoughts before we move into our next segment?
I'm just very, very thankful. I mean, just thank you so much for being a part of this beautiful mess, our beautiful mess.
Our angsty and misnomer of the Christian title mess.
No, exactly. Our very heretical mess. There's so many more adjectives we can throw in there, but like, honestly, it's always, like a pleasure to hear from other people's perspective. And I think I also grew up in a musical theater background ever since I was in third grade. And so there's a lot of pull in me about like me going through my puberty and like trying to discover who I was and who I still am. And a lot of what you said today really, really spoke out to, I know me personally, but I know there's going to be a lot more people out there that are going to hear this and probably relate to it too. So,
yeah. Well,
thank you both so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. It's so nice to catch up with you.
Yeah. And for those of you who are listening who don't know, so Jake and I actually had another guest, two guests who were going to be coming on, but unfortunately there was a situation that occurred. And so we had to literally in the last couple of hours, we're like, fuck, because we had planned to like talk with these individuals.
Oh yeah.
And like Joey and I literally just started talking. I was like, because I literally just listened to that podcast episode this morning because I finally got my head out of my ass. I was like, oh, I was like on my morning walk this morning. I was like, what should I listen to? And I was going through my podcast, like, that's right, these people have a podcast. And so this was the first episode that I was like, wait, the second episode is Joey Reyes? What the fuck? And so I was like, I need to listen to this. And so, like, it's really funny. And so I'm so thankful that you were able to put aside some time tonight. Last minute, like super last minute.
Oh, yeah.
Last, like, what, 3-4 hours, something like that? Because, like, it definitely worked out. And I think it all worked out for the better. Oh, well, not for the better. We do really like our other guests who are going to come on. But,
oh, yeah, yeah.
It worked out. It worked out equally. So, yes, again, thank you so much, Joey. If you do have more time, though, we do have a few of our segments that we have left. One of them, I believe, I could be wrong. Have you met our friend Kenneth before?
I'm quite familiar with Kenneth, yes.
Oh my God. He gets around. I know how.
He's natural, man. Oh, man. All right. Joey, please spill the tea on Kenneth right now.
Kenneth has showed up multiple times in my life, especially when I was at APU. I think that's where I like really got to know Kenneth.
Oh,
and it was just like, he was just like such a, and of course it's he, because you know, men are problems. So he really encouraged me to actually like be more vocal and opposing. He was the one that spoke out against me when I was in that LUCAT class. You know what I mean? Like that's just like one of the moments where he like showed his ugly face towards me. Okay. So, you know, yeah, Kenneth, I'm glad that we've distanced each other. We've grown apart since then. But I'm all too familiar with Kenneth and the way that he speaks. So I am familiar with the language.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know, for those of you, I don't think I've said this before, but Kenneth and I do go way back.
Mm-hmm.
We precede Jake, actually, on that. And so some of the stories that we have do come back to the APU days. And I, Joey, I do remember those days. Kenneth would come back to me and he was like, you can't believe, you wouldn't believe what Joey said. And I'd be sitting there like, eating my popcorn, like, oh, fuck. I can't wait to hear what's going on right now.
Here we fucking go.
Yeah, you know, I was just like, oh, this is going to be gold. And then I would be telling him like, oh my God, no way, Joey said that. But then I'd be like, hell yes, let's go. And I would tell him that sometimes too, but then he'd get pissed off and I'm like, okay, I got to keep on a short leash. It's like, you never know when I'm going to have a podcast and I'm going to need to have him, you know, I'm going to need to have stories of
exactly.
Kenneth there. Oh man, fucking Kenneth, man. So I think our guy pro tip for the day is, men, stop being fucking idiots.
Okay.
Just stop.
Men, embrace your feminine side. That's the pro tip.
Yeah. That's the pro tip. Embrace your feminine side.
Yeah, don't be afraid emotions. To have feelings.
Yeah. Exactly.
My emotions.
Oh man, that's good. Well, Jake, would you like to introduce our next section with your beautiful song?
Oh yeah. Fucking news.
All right. Well, fuck, I thought that was gonna be enough time. Okay. Sorry, I was like looking for the article and I couldn't find it.
Hold on, I'll stall longer. Do.
Yeah, do. Keep going.
Do. Do.
Hold on, sorry, I like went to go open up the link that I sent Jake and it's taking me this whole thing. Okay, so our news segment this week, Joey, I think I prefaced this for you a little bit ago of what this mm-hmm. is, and Jake, I did send this to you.
Oh, you did send this to me.
So for whatever reason on Facebook I still follow Relevant Magazine. I think mostly it's for this podcast. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know what Relevant Magazine is,
I don't know what that is.
So they're a Christian news.
That's why course. I don't know what it is.
Exactly. but I followed them back in like college and like my like hardcore ministry major days. Because I saw them at a church once. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Anyways, they're more progressive, I think, but maybe, I don't know.
I don't want to put words in that magazine.
Yeah, well. I don't know. But at one point, because I kept disagreeing with a lot of their stuff publicly on Facebook, I became a top fan. So this one came up today and I was like, oh, this is perfect.
Oh yeah. It features our favorite CEO entrepreneur
born in 1964. Jeffrey Bezos. And so, which this is a great time to also mention, Jeffrey Bezos did sponsor this episode. So,
he sponsored with the asterisk.
Redact me, pull it.
No. So here's the thing, Joey. We take money from all these people.
And money, by that, we mean Monopoly dollars.
And by that, we don't even get Monopoly dollars. So they didn't actually sponsor this episode. The real sponsor of this episode is the sisters that Joey mentioned before, the sisters of
Perpetual Indulgence.
Yes, Perpetual Indulgence. Those are our real sponsors. But so this news article, I'm just gonna read the top. Should someone tell Jeff Bezos there's no need to spend millions of dollars on finding eternal life? So, long story short, it says Jeff Bezos is the richest man in history by a comfortable margin, but that's never enough for these guys. Having amassed more money than one person could realistically spend in their lifetime, what's he going to do now? Give it all away to the poor? Don't be ridiculous. Of course not. So if climate change, maybe after he almost goes to space,
almost goes to space. Oh my God.
And his fund housing rocket initiatives, in a matter of speaking, maybe. No, what apparently captures Bezos's real fancy is living forever. So Jeff Bezos apparently invested millions into Alto Labs, a startup created by a Russian entrepreneur named Yuri Milner, with the goal of cracking gene reprogramming. So the idea is that if genes can be taught to reproduce themselves, then we can dramatically slow aging, or maybe stop it altogether. That's right. Bezos is trying to conquer death itself. That begs a question. Should someone tell him? Should someone let Jeff Bezos know that Jesus Christ defeated death by the power of his work and now through the infinite love of God, the path to eternity lies open to us all, not through any work of our own, but only through the divine grace. Kind of seems like someone should. If we were spending millions of dollars to invent something that already exists, we would want to know. Moreover, they just go into this. Oh, there's two more paragraphs.
I love how you said, let's do a short version of this to sum it up. Oh, no. And then you read the article.
You have got to have like the most grandest of grandeur, like attitude to feel like I can. Listen, I've seen enough. You know what I mean? Like, I have astigmatism. Uh-huh. I have to wear contacts and glasses for the rest of my life. And I think within the next few years, I'm just not going to renew my prescription because I've had enough. Yep. I'm tired of seeing it all. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I will very much welcome death when it comes to me. Because I don't know if we can keep doing this.
Oh, no. But this is so great because I think this is Jeff's way of being like, all right, I've got about 2 hours of sleep, constant thoughts of suicide. Oh, no, I'm running on 2 hours of sleep, suicidal depression, and an Oreo. And I'm going to fight God or become him.
Oh, my God.
That is not entirely inaccurate, that's for sure. Oh, my God. I mean, first of all, I think we have an award to give out with a trophy and everything. I just finished etching the name in with Sharpie, and it goes to cringiest article I've read all year.
Oh, so good.
And it goes to this one. But also, oh my God, the real article should have said, should we tell Jeffrey Bezos that death gives life meaning? Should we tell Jeffrey Bezos that should we tell him that someone could still kill him in an alleyway and his son will become the Batman? that's what the real article should say.
Yeah, but the comments are where the best part is.
Of course.
He could let his workers take bathroom breaks.
He could.
A lot of them are actually very anti-Jeff Bezos. They're all like, one was, can Bezos make a super effective carbon scrubber and reverse climate change, please? Thanks.
Yeah.
So all of them are like, he could use this money instead of trying to achieve eternal life on all these other things. But I just really like the snarky attitude that the Relevant magazine people had of being like, should someone tell him? Because Jesus. And I just think that's the funniest.
You've heard of the game Among Us. You know who really is Among Us? Jesus.
I don't know why that's my default.
Oh my gosh. I have a fantastic inappropriate joke, if you're willing to let me say it.
Go for it. Yes. I've never been more intrigued in my entire life.
Do you know what the best thing about Jesus was?
Oh no, what?
He was hung.
That was good.
Man, yeah.
That was good. He really was hung.
He really was hung.
he really got up there and T-posed on all of them.
Listen, I'm convinced that he was the queerest of queers in the history of the world. You know what I mean? Like, he had his 12 followers and that were like committed to him, and he turned the party, you know, making water into wine, ooh, you know, wearing his nice flowy robe
and his
long, gorgeous hair. Like,
and there is in the Old Testament, depending on, and Lauren said this once on her podcast, and she asked the question. I was like, Lauren, no, but just for the sake of this joke, in the story of Ruth versus Boaz, when it says that she laid at his feet, that implied that it was his ball sack or his penis.
Oh,
Jesus washed. And I had youth kids ask me this once. I was like, so if that's the case, then when Jesus washed his disciples' feet, I was like, first off, different language. But like, for the sake of the joke, he washed his disciples' feet. Wink, wink.
Dude, do you also, think all maybe he was just
into feet. Feet? Maybe he was just in the feet. What did you say, Jay?
Do you think all 12 disciples are on WikiFeet?
If not, we should put them there.
We will not kink shame Jesus.
Oh my God. We will not
kink shame Jesus. Is that the title of the episode?
That might be the title of the episode.
Do not kink shame Jesus.
Do not kink shame Jesus. Also, I'm sorry, Mom, for introducing you to WikiFeet. I'm sorry you had to find out this way through my podcast.
Don't have to tell her you're sorry for a lot of other things, though.
Nope, one thing at a time.
Okay. Well, on that note, once again, Joey, thank you so much. If you are comfortable, where can people connect with you if they have follow-up questions or if they just want to see your journey and how you do life and, you know, whatever the fuck you're doing?
Do life. Let's do life together, yeah, Daniel.
Do life together.
Are you triggered?
We are going to do life together in Jesus as we live in Christ.
In our Bible study group.
Carrying our Bibles.
Oh my God. No, yeah, absolutely. If people are interested.
Oh, I don't like that. That was like right in my ear when you said speaking in tongues.
Oh God.
Sorry, I speak with multiple tongues. If people wish to, they may follow me on both Instagram and Twitter. It's the same username. It's @MXJoeyReyes, the letter M, the letter X, and my name, Joey Reyes. If you don't know, MX is like a gender neutral salutation rather than Mr. or Mrs. It's pronounced mix. So
I like that. That's cool. I think I heard that once, but I didn't really. Let that sink in. So that's really cool. So go follow Joey. Go listen to their other podcasts as well that I already forgot the name of.
Yeah, so I have a link tree both in my Instagram and my Twitter bios where you can access the my podcast that I mentioned earlier, Soul Talk. And I also like post all the things like that I do, articles or projects that I'm working on or whatnot, because like I mentioned earlier, I produce things, so check it out.
Yes, go check out Joey. They're very talented individual. And what wine were you drinking tonight as we were talking, because I did see you pour some wine occasionally?
I know that summer is like officially unofficially over. It's still technically summer, but Labor Day weekend has passed. But I have some bottles of rosé that I still need to finish. And I'm usually a rosé drinker only in the summer, but I need to finish these, you know?
That makes sense, yeah.
It's a really pretty bottle, which is why I bought it, but it's called Curious Rosé Wine, if anyone's interested.
That sounds good. Meanwhile, Jake and I are drinking Lismore, which is from Trader Joe's It is a Speyside single malt Scotch whiskey.
Whiskey.
I gotta stay away from the dark liquors nowadays.
I can't. I mean, wine's good. I should drink more wine. Honestly, the Italian in me is like, you should drink more wine. And I'm just like, you know what? But whiskey.
I need good wine. I don't like wine most of the time because every wine that I've tried is either from the grocery store or my dad bought it one day and he's like, this is good. And I'm like, no.
Well, when we get Scuba on the podcast, we'll have Scuba bring over a lot of podcasts. Go listen to the Scuba podcast.
We'll have him bring over podcasts.
No, we'll have him bring over wine. Sorry. That's
what I was saying. We should just brainstorm like another podcast.
Like a little winery or something. Head down to like Temecula. I know there's some wineries down in Temecula. Do some tasting.
Hey.
I could also just call my uncle and be like, yo, what wine should I get? And he'll tell me all the expensive shit. He's like, I'm a freaking.
Oh no! You can always find like $10 to $15 bottles. Like those are usually like really good. You just gotta.
That's true.
You know, just figure out what you like.
That's true.
Fair enough.
That's my just pro tip.
Yeah, wine pro tips with Joey. On that note, thank you so much, Joey. Once again for being here. Hopefully, we can get you on again soon. We will drop the link where you can hear more of their story. Where they have a slightly different conversation with our friends Josie and Spencer over on Speaking in Church. So we'll drop the link in our show descriptions. Make sure to listen to that. And as always, we have a new saying after saying, sorry, Mom.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
something like stay angsty or I don't know, fucking go disrespect your surroundings. I don't give a fuck.
I know I pitched the idea, be gay, do crime.
That's exactly what I was about to say. I was gonna say, be gay, do crime.
All right.
Yeah.
Go and be gay, do crime, and disrespect your surroundings because that is the emo punk boy in me from A Day to Remember. A Day to Remember, I love you. All right. So long.
Bye.
May the Lord strike you infertile. Amen.
Ask as a researcher, Joey, do I have your consent to record this meeting?
You do have my consent to record
Wonderful.
This.
Like, I like creamy peanut butter. I don't know. Okay.
You would be a creamy person and not a chunky person.
Yeah.
Bitch.
So I think I just saw you pour your wine. So cheers to all of that. Yes. Thanks for cheersing on the mic. But cool. I think you started off last one, right?
I did, yeah.
Cool. Then I'll start off.
Also, that intro music went on for way too long. I don't know if you listened to it.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, it went on for like until the song ended.
Oh, no, yeah. That was on purpose. I have it go on for a little bit longer. But I'm still figuring it out, Jake.
You want to fucking edit it?
No.
Shut up.
Nothing's like off limits. Like, can I curse and stuff?
Yes.
And like
literally anything that you say will be here for. Also, you said your preferred pronouns were they, them.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Okay. Cool. Just so that we can know. And I mean, we're imperfect, so there's a chance we might mess up, but we will do our best to correct and apologize because. Pronouns are important
too. And we'll do it live on air and I mean, we'll apologize on Twitter, apologize
you'll
on...
do an apology YouTube video.
Oh my god, no.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's get started. Yeah, cool.
Yeah,
all right, I'm gonna clap. See, maybe it should come through because it's an MP3.